Welcome to Strong Tower Radio Today. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect the views of Strong Tower Radio, West Central Michigan Media Ministries, or its employees.
Welcome to Strong Tower Radio. I'm your host, Tom Majeur, and we're going to be talking about a very, very difficult subject. A subject that we might not even know exists. It's the topic of human trafficking. This month is Human Trafficking Awareness Month here in the United States, and I have two guests that will help me with this particular subject. Kylie Lanier is the Deputy Director and Co-Founder of TAT, which is Truckers Against Trafficking, a North American nonprofit organization committed to educating, equipping, empowering, and mobilizing key members of industries and agencies to combat human trafficking. Welcome, Kyla.
Hello.
And we also have Kelly, also Brooke, and Kelly is a training specialist for Truckers Against Trafficking. She's a speaker, author, advocate, and survivor of human trafficking, domestic violence, and sexual assault. Welcome to our program, Kelly.
Hello.
I want to tell our audience that this is a matter that maybe if you have younger children, you may want to use discretion on this topic of human trafficking. Let's go to a word of prayer. Our great Heavenly Father, we live in a difficult and evil world. And Lord, we just pray for those who are experiencing this, and for our listeners and those who need help in this particular area. You created a perfect world, and sin has caused this destruction, this pain and suffering. And Lord, we want to be your servants, to be helpful in any way possible, to help those who are being victimized by this terrible thing. Lord, be with our speakers and be with our audience. In Jesus' name, amen. Let's start with Kelly. You are a survivor of trafficking. Would you tell your story?
Sure. I first have to tell you how I grew up. And this talks about more of some of the vulnerabilities that I had that traffickers look for. So I grew up in a very abusive home. Physical abuse, mental abuse, sexual abuse. My father was a pedophile, and I was his punching bag whenever he had a bad day. And what he would tell me every single day was, "You're nothing, you'll never be anything, and you won't amount to nothing." And so when you hear that from your own father every single day, you believe it. And I had my daughter when I was 17, and I was working a decent job at that time and was able to get an apartment, get a car, and then I got hit by a car. So I was out of work. I lost my apartment. I couldn't go back to my dad's house. And so I moved to South Beach in Miami into one of the hotels, thinking that I could get a job there as a waitress or something like that. And I would, you know, I would be able to pay my bills. Well, one night when I was sitting outside in front of the hotel, a nice car pulls up, a guy gets out, he's fairly good looking, and he walks by me and he says, "Hey, beautiful." Well, I wasn't accustomed to getting compliments like that. I mean, my dad never told me I was beautiful. He never said he was proud of me. I mean, I made straight A's in school, and it wasn't enough. So for this man to say that I was beautiful, I was like, oh my gosh, okay. So for the next few weeks, he paid for my hotel. He paid for anything that we needed, like food, clothes, things like that. I told him about my background, and that's one of the things that traffickers do, is they learn what your vulnerabilities are by what you tell them.
This is very classic, is it not? Your experience?
Yes. Yes. And, you know, because they build that bond first. And so we built that bond. And after a few weeks, he said, you know, you really need to start making some money. And I said, well, I'm trying. And he said, well, do you know what I am? And I said, no. He said, I'm a pimp. I said, well, that's not the kind of lifestyle I want to live. And he said, well, you give it away for free, so you might as well get paid for it. And I was like, no, I'm good. And as I'm holding my daughter, he's telling me, what kind of mother would you be if you can't even take care of your own daughter? I had nowhere else to go. I had no other options. And I felt like this was the only thing I would be able to do. Because, see, when I already had a skewed view of what love and sex was, because that was the only time my dad was happy with me, was when he was molesting me. So I thought, okay, well, maybe this is what I'm supposed to do. And I went through a lot of beatings. That first night was horrible. The next day he took me to Washington, D.C. And there were many nights that, I didn't eat. There were days I didn't get any food, water, sleep, if I didn't make a quota. And also, on top of that, I would get a beating for not making that quota. And once I was able to get out of that situation by the help of law enforcement, they sent me back to Miami. And then I was living in a women and children's shelter. I was doing fine. And one day I'm sitting out on the bus to go on the bus to go look for a job. And I hear this guy from across the street. And he's like, did it hurt? I'm like, who is he talking to? I mean, this is a 6-lane highway I was on. So he comes across the street and he said, did it hurt? And I'm like, what are you talking about? He said, did it hurt when you fell from heaven? And I'm thinking, oh, wow, this gorgeous man thinks that I'm beautiful. If he only knew how broken I really am. And so we got to know each other over the next few weeks. And my daughter loved him. He was funny. He was affectionate. He was all of these things. And then when I revealed my secrets, and I had told him that I had been a prostitute, his eyes got really big and he said, you know what? He said, I'm a pimp. And here I got right back into the same thing as I was in before. And most people would say, why would you get back in when you really didn't want to? Well, first of all, I was already in love with this trafficker. And second of all, I had not healed from any of my past trauma. I hadn't healed from my dad. I hadn't healed from the first time I was trafficked. So we go back to what we know and what's comfortable, because we don't think there's any other choice. It's just like a domestic violence victim who goes back time and time again, because she remembers what that person was like before he was abusive. And so she tries to get that love again and get that man back. And So I was with my second trafficker for about 4 years. And he sent me to Memphis to meet his mom. And through a series of events, I ended up becoming friends with a young lady who was in the Salvation Army with me. And come to find out, she was running from her pimp. And after getting a job, getting my uniform, her pimp came to where we were at, snatched her up, snatched her kid up. And after they snatched my daughter up, I ran outside and there was a gun pointed to my head. And so there I was back in another situation. And he drove us to California. This particular trafficker was, he loved to torture. His beatings were tremendous. I mean, I experienced beatings from my first trafficker and my second trafficker, but nothing quite as bad as the beatings that I got from this last one. It would be daily, it would be, I would jump in the shower, and as soon as I would get out, he would take a belt, coat hanger, whatever he could get his hands on, and he would beat me with it. And after a few months, there was an incident that happened. He thought I broke one of the rules, and I took a massive beating. And without going into much detail, he tried to drown me in the bathtub. He beat me for hours. He tried to set me on fire. And he also choked me until I passed out. And there was not a part of my body that was not bruised. I was beaten until I was unrecognizable. And he wanted me to go out that night to make money. And the only way that I got out of that was when I was out, two police officers, they drove up. They said, you know what? We almost didn't recognize you. And so they knew that it was important for me to get my daughter because, see, what many people don't realize is, like with the first trafficker, he had a cousin in Washington, D.C. He said, my cousin is going to watch your daughter while you're working. I didn't see her for those few months that I was with him because he kept her away from me so that I wouldn't run. And with the last trafficker, he had her in a separate hotel room being watched so that I would not leave.
She was basically held as hostage in this particular situation.
Exactly. And that's what traffickers will do, especially if there are kids involved. They will use that to their advantage.
Let's bring Kylie in here for a moment. Help us interpret this. This is a very difficult story, a tragic story. Kylie, would you jump in and help us interpret some of this and see some of the signs and some of the key points that we should take note of this story, which is played over and over again, unfortunately, here in America?
Yes. So Kelly's story really represents, with the first two traffickers, sort of more of that Romeo pipping or that boyfriend experience. They came in, they complimented her, they endeared themselves to her, they made her dependent on them in different ways. And then that's when they flipped the script. And a lot of traffickers in the United States absolutely play on relationship and love, whether that is a boyfriend or girlfriend, whether that is in the form of a parent relationship or a friend relationship. they basically come alongside somebody that is hurting or in a vulnerable state, and they say, I'm going to make sure that you have everything that you need. I'm going to make sure that you get to go to school. I'm going to take you out of this really bad situation that you're in. We're going to get married and have the perfect life. I'm going to be your best friend. You'll never be alone at school again. Whatever it is, they're providing that relationship. And so a lot of times our trafficking victims are hiding in plain sight, and it looks like they're just in a relationship. It looks like they are complicit in their exploitation, because they will defend their traffickers a lot of times because of that trauma bond. And I think that Kelly's story really illustrates that so well. She was bonded to the first two traffickers in a way that, you know, made it a little bit harder for anybody else to get her away from them and to convince her that they meant her harm. And so I think that that's a piece of this. And, you know, just to define human trafficking for the audience, it is the exploitation of human beings through force, fraud, or coercion, either for the purposes of the commercial sex industry, and that can be street-based prostitution, it can be strip clubs, it can be massage parlors where they have a sexual act at the end. There's almost always a trafficking victim there. It can be in the legal commercial sex industry, like pornography, and we also have labor trafficking, and that can come in the form of, you know, agricultural work and construction, but we also see it in nail salons where people go and get their manicures and pedicures. You see this in those traveling sales crews that come to your door selling magazine subscriptions or cleaning supplies. If you've ever interacted with those types of groups, they have, they're much more aggressive in their sales tactics, and that's because what we've learned is on the back end, they're being deprived of food, deprived of water, sleep. Sometimes they're physically assaulted. Sometimes they're left out in the middle of nowhere, no phone, no money, no anything, in order to punish them because they hadn't made enough sales. It's a classic labor trafficking scenario. We see this in nannies in people's homes, maids and cooks. And you also see this with traveling carnivals and things like that that are coming into town, like fairs. And so really any industry, whether it's in the commercial sex industry or in a labor situation, can have exploiters and can have these trafficking victims. And the force, you've heard very clearly in Kelly's story, force is going to be beatings, rapes, torture, brandings, burnings, deprivation of food and water. Fraud is going to be that promise of one thing, but the delivery of another, whether it's, hey, I've got a job for you modeling, or I have a job for you working at a restaurant, or I've got a job for you being a nanny in someone's home. And then once they come to do that job, that's when they switch the scene on them and they keep them there. And then you have the coercion. And you also saw this in Kelly's story, where you have threats, you know, threats against, in her case, her child. But you'll see this with threats against other family members, whether they say they're going to hurt other family members, kill other family members, or exploit other family members. Like, if you don't do what I say, I'll make your sister do this. I'll make your child do this. And then there's threats against the person themselves, right? Like, you're going to get hurt, or I'm going to take video of you doing these things, and then I'm going to show these videos all over to, you know, put it on the internet or send it to your pastor or your family members. And they're going to see how terrible you are as a person. And all of that coercive threat and or the fraud and or the force keeps these people in these situations constantly.
Listeners, you're listening to a program, a difficult program, on human trafficking. This is Human Trafficking Awareness Month, the month of January. And I just want to share with you that I lived a sheltered life and was not aware of much of this. Just recently, a year ago, a fellow person asked me to get involved in a committee on the to attend a committee on the subject of human trafficking. We saw at the same time somewhat that the Michigan State Police had this awareness campaign. It came to the radio stations. It was forwarded to me. I contacted the Michigan State Police and Lieutenant Chris Keller. And we did an interview on this particular program about a year ago. And being on this committee for about 3 months, what I heard that Kelly was talking about, I saw those warning signals. And we need to be, listeners, we need to be aware of these particular situations. I heard, you know, basically, nothing is for free in life except for the love of God and the plan of salvation. But much in life is not free, and if it's too good to believe, it is. And literally, I can think of three ladies that young ladies that I've been aware of. I was a school chair of drafting design and in Grand Rapids, and I had a student who worked in a club at night, and during the day, if she was able to, she studied, and there was many nights she fell asleep at her computer trying to do her job. And what I heard about the things, the way the gifts and the rewards and the good life that they had, that's on the good side, the enticement side. But I think of a couple of young ladies that I fear, even today in 2023 and 24, who are being, I suspect, being solicited just like this, gifts, unexpected gifts, and so on and so forth. Kelly, would you like to talk to that just briefly?
Yes, because I was not used to getting the gifts. I was not used to getting the affection. I was not used to someone doting on me because we just didn't show that kind of affection in our household. And for someone on the outside to show me that, I craved it. I craved that love and affection. And so they were able to offer this to me. And like you said, it wasn't for free. It was at a very high cost.
The cost came later on. That wasn't made known right in the fine print.
Exactly.
What? Let's go to Kyla. What is the scope of human trafficking? You described the different aspects. Sometimes it's of labor, sometimes it's of sexual nature. What is the scope of this? I mean, literally, I live in northern Michigan, northwestern Michigan, Cadillac. It's like, this is the idyllic place. This is safe place. This is not in the urban centers where we know there are problems. Give us a reality check.
Sure. So it is, there are 50 million people enslaved worldwide. That's according to the International Labor Organization. That's predominantly labor trafficking, then sex trafficking, then organ trafficking, where they're harvesting people's organs and then selling them on the black market to the highest bidder. And then you have child soldiers. It makes a $150 billion annually. So this is a greed-motivated industry for the traffickers. because it's free labor, and then they can sell those products at a 100% profit. And then you think of sex trafficking, they sell the person over and over, and they continue to make profit on them. It is happening in all 50 states, including Washington, D.C. It happens in urban areas like you would think, but it also happens in rural and suburban areas. I guarantee you it's happening in every single one of our neighborhoods, in every single one of our towns, whether that is a family member selling a family, a sibling or a child or a niece or a nephew, whether that is an undocumented worker being exploited, whether that is someone with a mental or a physical disability that is being exploited. It literally is happening all around us. And we don't notice it because we're not looking for it. And it is, you know, one in six runaways are at risk for being trafficked as well because they are homeless. You know, traffickers don't even have to give them affection. All they have to do is offer basic needs, a meal, maybe a shower, maybe a bed for the night. And so it's just basic needs that are being offered there. The traffickers' tactics adapt to the vulnerability that they're seeing. So in Kelly's case, she wanted love. She wanted affection. She wanted to be needed. She wanted to be seen. And so they were able to play on that. Somebody else, it might be having a home. It might be safety. It might be a job opportunity. It can be any type of vulnerability that's out there. And I would tell you that the groups that they're after, and this is a really important place for the church to really address as well. And I know that there has been a movement throughout the American church, and I'd like to see it grow, is in foster care. If you look at the foster care system in the United States, the pipeline between foster youth and sex trafficking in this country is outrageous. I think in some studies, they've shown that 2/3 of sex trafficking victims that have been identified were in foster care. So you are talking about a vulnerable population. And so when the church can really embrace the foster youth in their neighborhoods, in their communities, in their schools, really surround them with love and support, both ones actively in foster care, but also recently exiting foster care. That's they don't have anybody. Like, our kids go off to college or leave the home. They still have our support, right?
Right.
They can come back home if something goes wrong. They get into a bad crisis. We can bail them out or give them a loan, right? There's safety. For a foster youth, they exit the system. They age out of the system, basically. And there's nobody there. There's no safety net. And who's waiting? Traffickers. And I always say there's more good people than bad people. And the Christian church really has a role to play here in stepping in and filling in these gaps and really lessening vulnerabilities in their neighborhood, whether that is supporting the local food bank, really mentoring in schools and becoming a tutor, or really getting into the foster care system through adoption, through foster parenting, or providing those support systems when they age out.
Well, that's a wonderful positive note to close out the first section on this topic, very, very difficult subject of human trafficking. We have Kylie Lanier. She's the deputy director and co-founder of TAT. That's Truckers Against Trafficking in North America. And also Kelly S. Alsobrook, and she is a trainer with the same organization. We will continue this discussion after this break. I'm your host, Tom Majur, for Strong Tower Radio.
Hi, folks. Jelaine Fenner here. We are definitely living in uncertain times, and for some of us, it's scary. Signs of the times are everywhere. Jesus is coming back soon. Read Revelation chapter 22. Jesus says, "Surely I am coming quickly." We at Strong Tower Radio have a free book for you called The Great Controversy. Go to the back of the book and read chapters 35 to 42. It'll help you understand the times we're living in and what's ahead. This book even has 800 historical quotes and 1,200 Bible quotes. I love this book. Call Strong Tower Radio today, 231-468-2087, and ask for The Great Controversy While Supplies Last. And if we don't answer, please leave a message asking for The Great Controversy with your name, address, and phone number. That's 231-468-2087 on Strong Tower Radio, where God's character is proclaimed.
We're back with the topic of human trafficking. This is January, which is the month of human trafficking awareness. We have Kylie Lanier, the deputy director and co-founder of TAT. That's Truckers Against Trafficking. It's a North American nonprofit organization to educate, equip, empower, and mobilize key members of industries and agencies to combat human trafficking. There's a story behind that. Kyla, why don't you tell our listeners, and we also have Kelly, she's literally a victim, a three-time victim of human trafficking. And if you missed the first part of the story, you can go on to our website. The easiest way is STR, Strong Tower Radio, str.fm or strongtowerradio.org, and under resources, you can go on to archives and hear the first part of the story that Kelly told us. Kyla, tell us a little bit about your organization, Truckers Against Trafficking, and how you became the co-founder of this valuable, helpful organization.
So Truckers Against Trafficking started 15 years ago. And our mission is to educate, equip, empower, and mobilize members of the trucking, bus, and energy sectors to recognize and report human trafficking as a normal part of their jobs. We recognized very early that truck drivers are the eyes and ears of our nation's highways. They see things other people don't see. They're trained to be vigilant. And they are in some of the locations that traffickers bring their victims to exploit. And so we thought that if they were trained on the realities of this crime, they would do the right thing.
You know, it's really interesting. I have some truck driver friends, some over-the-road truck drivers, and it's amazing. We have to give a lot of credit to them. Literally, America's food chain, supply chain, we're using that word today, is with the trucking industry. If the trucks don't move, we don't eat. But these people have an uncommon touch with the world and what is going on. You ask them what's going on in America, your truck driver can usually tell you if they've been on the road for a period of time, and you say eyes and ears. So well put.
Absolutely.
So
yeah, absolutely.
And you know what's interesting is a lot of times the over the road, unfortunately, one of the things that they give up is they their roots in a single location. They spend days on the road and such, but you know it's hard for them to get into. I'm just guessing, but I think this is a good guess. That for them to contribute to society, you know, to the Rotary Club, it's not going to happen. You know what I'm saying? To the PTA, unfortunately, they can't do that. They're in town 1 week and a few days, and they're out of town, so they can't take some of those roles in society. But, wow, they are in the right place at the right time and with the right heart can do something that most of the rest of us can do a small part in.
Right. And they've spent the last 15 years proving that. And then other industries have replicated this model because of the example of the American truck driver. We now operate in Canada. We've also replicated this model down in Mexico with our partners down there. We have seen this take place now in the bus industry, the energy industry, the convenience store industry. We don't work with the convenience stores, but another organization started Convenience Stores Against Trafficking, replicating our model. And it's exciting to see, right? when people know the truth about this crime, when they have indicators that they would recognize how it presents itself in their industry specifically, they're proving that they will make the call on behalf of a victim. And, you know, the American truck driving profession has done such an excellent job of making this issue their own and saying, no, we're not going to stand for this. And we are going to stand in the gap for these victims that are out here.
Amen. And praise the Lord.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit. You have a very interesting story about how you got involved. Your story is much different than Kelly's.
Yes. So I was a high school teacher, and my sisters all had different jobs. So did my mom. And she sent my sisters and I a book back in 2007 called Not For Sale by David Batstone. And she told us all to read the book. And I know you guys don't know my mom, but when she tells you to do something, you do it.
Okay.
And so we read the book, and we were just horrified that slavery still existed. We had all fought injustice in different ways throughout our lives. And we all have a justice bent in us. And we had taken on discriminatory things and exploitative things our whole life. But we didn't realize slavery existed until we read this book. And so we had a conference call, and we said, we have to do something. And so we started our first nonprofit from that call, called, named Chapter 61 Ministries, after Isaiah 61, setting the captives free.
Wow.
And
I'm picturing this. Your mom sends this book out, says you must read it. You and your sisters read the book, and it's like, wow. And so you have a conference call, and you form this organization. Wow. I mean, talk about not just sitting on the sidelines. You are out there doing it. And so tell us the rest of the story.
Yeah. So our mission was to end human exploitation worldwide, because why aim low? Aim for the stars. And as we studied the issue and were learning from the people that have been doing this work for quite some time, my sister, who was our executive director for 10 years, she and her neighbor put on a big human trafficking awareness conference, and we all flew up to Denver to attend that conference. And in one of the breakout sessions, a guy was talking about his desire to train gas station attendants on the signs of human trafficking. And that just made sense to me. And I went to my mom and I said, we should do something like this. And she had been reading all of this research and the FBI, big national human trafficking stings. And she's like, you know who we should get? Our truck drivers. She's like, you know, my parents owned a motel in El Paso when I was growing up. Most of our clients were truck drivers. And she's like, they're really good guys. If they knew what was happening, they'd do something about it. And so we started TAT as an initiative of Chapter 61 initially. And then all we were doing all the time was TAT. And so we disbanded Chapter 61, and TAT became its own 501c3. And so I've been working for TAT since its inception, and have gotten to know really great people. And I'm proud to be part of the trucking industry, like part of this great institution, and, you know, working alongside them to combat this crime.
Let's go back to Kelly's story, and I left you hanging because I cut you off and asked you some questions, and we finished the half hour, but your daughter is not even with you. It's like she's being held a hostage, did you say, in Washington, D.C.? Where were you again?
In Washington, D.C.
Okay, well, same city, but not with you, huh?
No, she wasn't with me. She was with a family member.
There's something wrong. There's something wrong with that, isn't there?
Yeah, I would say so. I thought that I was going to be able to visit with her, talk to her, all of those things, but I was not able to do that.
Wow.
And then, Kelly, the third trafficker also kept your, in California, the third trafficker also kept your daughter separate.
Correct. In a separate hotel room.
Wow. So some police officers saw that you had unfortunately been badly beaten, and they said you had the signals of trafficking all over you, and they did something. Tell us the rest of the story.
Well, when they pulled up to me, they had recognized, they really couldn't recognize who I was because I was so, my face was so swollen and I was really unrecognizable, but they knew that I had been out on the streets and stuff like that. And they said, please let us help you. And so I broke down into tears. I told them what was going on. I told them that my daughter was being held in a different room. So they knew that she was of the utmost importance. And so I told them where they were. They did reunite me with my daughter and then arrested the trafficker. They kept me in protective custody until court, which court never happened because he plea bargained. And, you know, they said, well, do you want to go back home to Miami? And I said, yes. And, you know, I would love to say that once I exited out of that life permanently, that my life was all rainbows and unicorns, but I can't tell you that. I still hadn't healed. And, you know, so now we've got trauma, my childhood trauma, three different traffickers over a period of 5 years. And because I don't know anything else, I get into domestic violence relationship after domestic violence relationship after domestic violence relationship. And there was a lady who I ended up going to school to be able to do nails. And so when I was working in the salon, there was a lady that came in there every 2 weeks for a year. And she would invite me to her church all the time, every time she came in. And my response was the same every time she would ask. I said, listen, if I go to a church, it's going to burn down. That's how low I thought of myself. Because not only in trafficking do we have to deal with physical beatings, but you have to understand the psychological abuse that we take as well. We are called all kinds of names, derogatory names, not just by the trafficker, but also from those who are purchasing us.
You're being used, and you are subject to their whims, which is so, so wrong in every sense of it, psychologically, morally, physically.
Right. So it's not just the trafficker, but the buyers could be just as brutal, if not more brutal. And so finally, after a year, I told her, yeah, I'll go to your church. And that is when I started a little bit of healing. I fell back and felt like I really struggled with the fact that God could love someone as dirty as me. And it was a real struggle. But over the last 15, 16 years, I have been on my healing journey, still in church, and growing my relationship with God daily, because if it weren't for him, I should have been dead. But God has taken what the devil meant for bad,
right,
and turned it into something good.
Kelly and Kyla, tell us how the church, Kyla, you mentioned what we can do. let's go over that in more detail. Make it as tangible as possible.
Sure.
How can we do this as a church? It doesn't matter what denomination you are. How do we, this is not always a pretty situation, I don't suppose. It's difficult. Kelly tells us about returning to it, and the church has to stay with the people through those ups and downs, the back and forth. Give us some details.
I'm going to tell you from a survivor's point of view. The biggest thing the church could do is not judge by what someone looks like, by what they're wearing. You don't know what their backstory is. And sometimes we get so comfortable in the church that people forget where they came from, how broken they were. And so, you know, I know that's a pretty bold statement for me to make, but I've lived through that. And nobody here is perfect. And the church is not a hotel. It is a hospital for those who are broken. And I think if we can remember that as a church and stop judging, then more people will actually feel the love that is given through the church.
Kyla.
Yeah. What I would say to everybody listening is human trafficking is an everywhere problem, so it is an everybody solution. And all of us have a role to play. And it can be as simple as on a regular basis, keeping, you know, supporting your local food pantry, because it is lessening vulnerabilities in your community that also helps fight human trafficking. So you are shoring up those vulnerabilities. You're supporting those children that are suffering abuse at home. You're supporting people that are at risk academically. You're supporting organizations that work with the homeless population. You're supporting organizations that work with the undocumented population, wherever it is. And so what I would say is a really great book that I'm reading right now is called Agents of Flourishing. And it's talking about how the church really is stepping into their communities in ways that are amazing, whether that is looking at their local public schools and coming alongside them and supporting. Guys, if you look at any of the exploitative things that are happening in our communities, you see it reflected in the schools. So when we can come around the schools and support, whether that is through mentoring, tutoring, providing clothes and food for those that are struggling, coming alongside your foster youth in your community, these are the types of things that can be done. I would say if you're wanting to do active anti-trafficking work versus this more community lessening of vulnerabilities work with the organizations, ask them what they need. It might be they need somebody to help the people that they're working with learn how to write resumes or do interviewing skills so that when they go on an interview, it's not their first time. Like, the pressure's taken out because they've had all of these mock scenarios. Maybe it is teaching some skills to them. Maybe it is just really coming alongside them and supporting them financially with clothing drives or paper good drives. You don't know until you ask. And then I know that there are some churches that do street ministries where they're out there on the streets where a lot of prostitution is taking place. If you're going to do that, I think you need specialized training with survivors and survivor advocates that are in the movement so that you are coming to them in a way that is trauma informed and that you can really be that support and have a place for them to go if they do say, yeah, I do want to leave. Yeah, I do accept your invitation. Yeah, I do want to get out of here. You have to be able to help them get out. So I think working with survivors and survivor advocates to craft those types of programs is going to be the best bet. But no matter how small or how large your vision is, just do it. And that's what I would say, whether that is, I'm going to buy an extra $10 worth of groceries every week when I go, and I'm going to give that to my local food pantry. That is huge. Or I'm going to give a coat to the coat drive for people that maybe don't have that. Or I'm going to provide a job to somebody that's having a hard time if you're in that position. Whatever it is you can do to lessen vulnerabilities, you are, by proxy, fighting human trafficking.
Amen. Let me ask you this question. As we walk around our congregation, no matter which congregation you're at, there are young people who are at risk. I'm not saying that they are participating or have been victimized yet, but they're on the vector. They're on the trajectory of this. I just think of us as adults in healthy situations as greeting young people. If you're seeing somebody, and you help me out with this, I'm just speculating, but if you see a child who's not integrating into the socialization of your congregation or at the edge of the conversation, left out, to me, we talked about how the exploitation that these people exploit, that we should use this to the glory of God to assure, affirm, and lift up these people so that they are not vulnerable to traffickers. Am I somewhat on the right track?
Yeah, absolutely. I would tell you all teenagers are vulnerable, because just a natural part of our development at that age is wanting outside affirmation and outside acceptance and to be, you know, considered attractive and important. So I would tell you, coming alongside the young people at your church or in your community is critical, and having real conversations about, you know, the realities of this. It's not the boogeyman that's jumping out or taking pictures of you at Walmart or putting a zip tie on your car door or the guy at the white van at the convenience store. That's not actually, there's no actual legitimate cases of human trafficking that has started that way. Those are all social media types of myths, right? But people believe that. And if they just think it looks like that, they're not understanding how it really happens. How it really happens is somebody that's posing as a friend. It's somebody that's posing as a boyfriend or a girlfriend. It's somebody that's posing as like a support system for you. And so when they're looking for the bad stranger danger, they're missing perhaps the manipulative efforts of somebody that's exploiting them slowly, right? And so I think having those conversations about traffickers' tactics, telling them, hey, if you ever get a weird feeling about somebody, like, I'm here to talk to you and you won't be in trouble. Like, I want to hear what you have to say. And, you know, being that support system, but having those open conversations with them. I talked to my daughter about this since she was 8 years old. I started her on labor trafficking, I think, when she was about 12. I gave her like a very broad, high level view of what sex trafficking was. And she, as a 13-year-old, had a friend that came to school, and her friend said, there's this guy, he took a screenshot of me in my bra, and he's saying that if I don't take more pictures, you know, naked, that he's going to put these pictures out there, he's going to send them to my parents, I don't know what to do. And my daughter immediately was like, this is the grooming stage for human trafficking. We need to tell a trusted adult.
Yes.
Like at 13, because she knew what it was. I didn't scare her. I educated her. And then I empowered her to know what to do. Hey, if you ever hear of these types of things, right? This is what a trafficker does. And so you need to let me know. And so she was able to like cut through. That's not a boyfriend. That's a bad guy. You know, that's not somebody that cares about you. This is somebody that's trying to exploit you. And like immediately we were able to nip that in the bud for this young girl.
Why don't you take this opportunity? You've given a real life personal example. Let's talk to with our listeners about TAT, which is Truckers Against Trafficking, and things that they tangibly can do in the last couple minutes of our program today.
Yeah, well, just to follow up on that, we just created this past year parent resources on our website. So for any parents listening that wants to know how to talk to your children about this age appropriate, we've got those parent resources on our page, truckersagainsttrafficking.org, under the resources tab, and you'll be able to find those to you know, have those conversations. What I would also say is, if you know of any over the road truck drivers, local drivers, rideshare, delivery drivers, whatever, we have training specific to them as well. All of you live in a school district. We have school transportation curriculum. So every school bus driver should be trained on this, because we touched on this very briefly, but familial trafficking is a very real problem in the United States. And so these kids are being trafficked by family members, and they go to school during the day. A lot of times they're riding the bus. And so school bus drivers, if they were trained on this, they would be able to intervene in the lives of these people, these victims, much earlier. So what I would tell you is, educate yourself. This is the month that every anti-trafficking organization is like inundating their Facebook pages, their websites. All of this is outreach to everybody in our society to learn more about this crime. So I would say follow either our social media. We're on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, or X now. You can go on any other anti-trafficking org's website or social media and just learn more about this subject. You can get involved locally in your community. Every state has a task force against human trafficking, but this is the time to learn. This is the time to learn. And if you can financially support an organization, whether ours or a local one or another anti-trafficking org, I would encourage you to do that. But more than anything, I would just tell you, all of us have been given gifts and talents by God. We have skills that we have honed in our careers, in our lives. Put those to use for those who are more vulnerable. Put those to use to help make our society better. Each of us has a gift to give.
Kyla, that was so well put, and it applies for this situation as anything else. And Kelly, thank you so much for sharing your story of vulnerability, and bless you, and we're so proud of you, of the journey that you've taken and where God is going to take you ultimately.
Thank you. It was my honor.
And Kyla, thank you so much for stepping up, and what your mother instilled upon you is that social responsibility, that spiritual responsibility, and thank you for your service.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you.
And listeners, this is National Human Trafficking Awareness Month. Do your part and engage somehow, some way. And I think that Kyla has given us some good wisdom to help a young person, help an organization, or get educated and help people in the trucking industry, the transportation industry, be aware and help us to reduce and, if possible, eliminate this crime and this moral blight on our land. I'm Tom Azure for Strong Tower Radio. God bless. Bye now.